Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Dr. Shartok has important things to do, so we've got to do this show so that he can get onto the important things. Did you hear that, Ira?
Well, Ira's coming with me this time.
Oh, I see. I'm the only one with nothing important to do. It's The Media Project. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, the unimportant one here. Next to me, Ira Fussfeld, former publisher of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, one-time sports journalist, editor, city editor, man of many hats.
Yes.
Speaking of hats, Dr. Shartok has a Northeast Public Radio hat on. Alan Shartok, CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Many hats himself, many ties.
Well, now, wait a second. I got to tell you something. Somebody called in during the fun drive.
What's that?
Our recent fun drive, and said, my favorite show is The Media Project.
Yeah.
Because Rex and the others beat Alan and his insufferable ego into the ground. My favorite comment of the entire show.
But you seem to keep bouncing back.
Yeah, somehow he seems resilient, doesn't he? Our best efforts notwithstanding.
Before you start, can we reassure the listeners that that was not you who was on the Hearst Tower yesterday?
I was not the person climbing. No, those poor window washers up there, and there are a lot of windows. Their scaffolding collapsed, and these guys were...
Well, I got nervous because I don't know Hearst, obviously, as well as I know my own company, and there are certain companies that if an employee manager was not in good favor, they might give them that kind of...
Out washing the windows, or as the old joke goes, the viper is coming.
Something like that.
The viper is coming. Finally, the viper shows up, but it's the window viper.
We're here all week, folks. All right. By the way, because I'm sure we're going to say something about the recently completed fun drive, and Alan can take a bow. It was a wonderful thing.
It really was. It was a record breaker. It was terrific. We really loved it.
There we go.
We loved all the people.
Then, as long as we're all bragging a little bit, let's all brag on behalf of the citizens of Albany, that is the greater capital region, I presume, which is second in the nation in terms of readership of newspapers. That's not just the Times Union, but readership of newspapers.
Well, what does that mean?
It means that people here really like to read, actually, daily print newspapers. It's kind of amazing. Actually, and the statistic not reported in this particular article by editor and publisher of the Trade Magazine, owned by Ad Age, is that on Sundays, 82% of adults in the capital region read a newspaper. Isn't that amazing?
Now, I wonder, is there a correlation, because we know that older people like newspapers more, is there a correlation between aging cities and newspaper readership? Do we know that?
One might say, because the top city for newspaper readership is Pittsburgh. That would be an aging city, I presume, right? Albany, Hartford, New Haven is tied with Albany, Cleveland, and then comes Buffalo, Honolulu, New York City, and Toledo.
Well, Pittsburgh is definitely coming back, so I wouldn't make any assumptions about that. Pittsburgh is a hot place.
Hot place.
Okay. The hot places in the world right now are Brooklyn and Pittsburgh.
Is that right?
No, I meant Brooklyn is hot. Brooklyn is really hot.
Speaking of hot, the places with lowest newspaper readership are all in southern climes. So there may be something to what you're saying. You know, the bottom five are Atlanta, Houston, San Antonio, Las Vegas, and Bakersfield, California.
Yeah. So. Well, but there may be a correlation with other things that we're not either going to say or even
school systems. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a Texas way of sort of saying the same thing. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was a Texan for 4 years, but
Yeah.
So it's Tex Rex.
It was. That's that would
or put another way, T-Rex.
So there's been a lot going on in the news. I mean, it's been a remarkable situation in about the news. There was Glenn Greenwald in the Guardian, the revelation the National Security Agency was collecting data on Verizon customers. The Washington Post story that the NSA and the FBI monitoring internet activity. The self-outing of Edward Snowden, who seems to be the source of those revelations, the CIA analyst and so on.
Something's a little confusing to me when I first saw that name, Snowden. Wasn't there a Snowden who married into the royal family?
Lord Snowden. Lord Snowden.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's what I thought.
I don't think it's the same guy.
Oh, it's definitely not.
I don't think it's even the same spelling.
No.
It's done versus done.
Oh, well, see, the thing I hate about you print guys is you're always concerned about things like spelling.
Well, you know, there are any number of angles that we could discuss all of these kinds of leaking and whistleblowing and revelations and what it means and how important it is. But from the media standpoint, the one that caught my eye last night as we speak was Congressman Peter King, and we need to consider the source. Congressman Peter King wants to see Glenn Greenwald, the reporter for The Guardian who wrote these stories. He wants to see him arrested.
Peter King, we should set this up, is a Republican from New York's Long Island.
Right, a product of the Nassau Republican Organization.
Right.
Is it Nassau or Suffolk?
Nassau. Yeah. He was the comptroller in Nassau County for a long time.
Yeah, don't forget that Rex worked for a long time.
Well, the reason I thought it was Suffolk is because Suffolk is more conservative, and certainly King is conservative. But, yeah. Okay.
Well, he's conservative on some things, but not on others. When the federal government decided not to include New York in on some of the tough things. King was right up there.
His ox
the
being
money.
Gored yeah, made him another made another matter. So do we think that the reporter ought to be prosecuted?
So the reporter, for doing his job, which is to report the news from a reputable source and that presumably has been vetted as a reputable source, they want him arrested. Where does that domino stop falling?
Why is he arrestable? In other words, what did
he's
he do?
He's not arrestable.
Well, what's the argument that
I think the argument that he would make is that, my word, not necessarily his, that if Edward Snowden, the leaker, the whistleblower, some might call the traitor, releases this information, that using what the thing that happened with Fox recently with Rosen, is he a co-conspirator? He is helping to disseminate information that may be harmful to the United States.
Well, that's absurd.
Of course it's absurd.
What may be more problematic for the Justice Department is whether to arrest Snowden or not for leaking this material. You know, let me just check in with you guys for a second, and that is that every democracy sooner or later gets into trouble when the leaders of that democracy start to say, I'm protecting you, I'm saving you, I'm stopping harm from happening to you. You could go back and you could look at the Mussolinis and all the other people. They all did the same thing, and that's when the stuff goes down. And so we're seeing it right here. The question is, what will the public say? The public say, yeah, I'd rather be protected than have democracy and have civil liberties.
You know, I think you're right, and the difficulty is that the threats are so terrifying at this point, and they're also less visible. It was one thing when governments were protecting against physical invasion. Now we say governments are protecting us against both terrorists who operate surreptitiously and so quietly that you don't even know that they're there until they strike, and against cyber threats, which are virtually invisible. Mm-hmm. And so the government can make all these claims that they're protecting us, and that is what Washington is telling us now.
But they're sending people up to the Hill to testify to say, you don't even know how many times we have saved you.
You're right. You don't even know.
And,
will you?
The terrorists know that these kinds of things are going on. You mean to tell me that people who are out to do us no good are not suspecting that phone calls are being monitored, etc.? This is not a revelation to anybody, except apparently to some people in this country. Now, whether or not we like it is a separate question. But it's hard to believe that anybody should really be surprised in this day and age of smartphone and internet and the ability for individuals to be traced either by the government or by newspapers like yours or mine, which use demographics to place specific advertising on internet sites. And these things are going on. So the government can't have it both ways in this regard. On the one hand, everybody in the government knew about this. All of the senators knew about it. All the congressmen knew about it. And then on the other hand, you've got the NSA guy saying, thing. He was
That's
physically
national security.
Yeah, he was physically sick when this stuff was revealed. Well, wait a minute. Everybody knew about it, but then they're physically sick.
Well, let me try to at least take the opposite.
And by
side
the way, I'm out of my comfort zone because I'm not talking about media. But go ahead.
But no, let me take the other side on that for a moment. Crooks are picked up on wiretaps all the time. They talk, and you know it convicts them. They ignore the fact that what you're saying is intellectually they should know. But then there's a whole crowd of imbeciles who would do harm to the American people, who put bombs in their shoes and who, as an individual, decide. And they're stupid. I mean, these are stupid people in some cases. And those people get picked up on some of these taps and the rest of it. So I'm telling you, Ira, it isn't that everybody should know that everybody's phone calls are being intercepted.
But there will be a greater, as a result of these revelations, there will be a greater understanding, even among the slow-witted who don't pick up on this stuff very quickly,
the
digital stuff is out there and it's being monitored.
And that is why, of course, so many lawmakers and others are so angry at this disclosure, because now it makes the security people's jobs harder.
But as is often the case with these kinds of revelations, think about the value that the journalism presents in helping people to understand this. One of the great weaknesses of government that is exposed by these stories is how much secret material is in the hands of seemingly low-level individuals. This Edward Snowden, who was a high school dropout, who had been working for the government for 3 months, who is somehow being paid, according to The Guardian, at a rate of $122,000, whatever that means.
Yes, but you're right, of course, Rex. There's no question. But I do think it's problematic. We want the press to tell us what's going on. But when you bring a head guy from one of the security agencies up and the congressman say to him, how could you be letting this kind of guy have this money? His answer was, it was wrong and we'll have to fix that. So apparently it's going on.
But revealed by this reporter.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Were it not for the reporter, we would not know, and these abuses wouldn't have been happening. So those who say, well, shame on the media for exposing this stuff, or Peter King, who wants to criminalize journalism.
Well, he's just pandering. I mean, that's all he's doing.
Well, but I think you're right, but he's pandering to a certain element of his constituency or to a certain element of Americans who really believe that, who would say, you know, lock up the reporters. But what terrible stuff this is that's going on. Thank goodness we know about it. Well, how do you know about it? Because the government's not going to tell you by itself.
Okay, Rex and Ira, what's the answer?
Well, I think the answer is that people like Greenwald are fulfilling our role as a media in a free press is supposed to be. We're supposed to be watchdogs. It's an imperfect system. We have a lot of leeway that's given to us by the First Amendment. There are going to be mistakes, and hopefully the mistakes are minimalized and don't have deadly consequences, but that was sort of factored into this imperfect system as it was made out. And I would like to think, although I'm not convinced of it, that the public would recognize that these kinds of things are necessary to be done and reported by the press, because on balance, it is what we need in a free society.
Yeah.
Because the government's default position is always going to be secrecy.
Okay, but what happens when the next plane blows up?
Yeah.
And the authorities come forward and say, you see, this is a pretty good example. We lost all those people, and it didn't have to happen. But with the interference with our security apparatus, we now have positive proof that this is the kind of thing we would have picked up before, but we can't pick up now.
Why? Wait a minute. Doesn't it say that they can't pick up stuff? That is, you're saying that if people didn't realize that their calls were being monitored, they might have said stupid things.
Or there may have been, look, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Or there may have been changes. Because, basically, if I understand him, I'm with Ira on this. That was a shot.
it's time for us to put him down.
That was a shot. Okay. But my feeling is that this need for security on the part of people is really a part of strain. And, Ira, to respond to what you said before, there's so many people out there that have, the name of the game has just changed with all of the digital stuff that we're having here now. I mean, this is not the same world that we used to live
in. Well, the kind of reporting that Greenwald did, based on his own interviews, is different than, for example, what happened with WikiLeaks and Bradley Manning, where, if I understand it correctly, Manning released unfettered documents and WikiLeaks regurgitated these unfettered documents.
Right.
Whereas the kind of material that Greenwald has reported on was edited by them first. They vetted it. Now, you have to have some trust in the reporting process that, in fact, they vetted it
and withheld
properly.
A great deal of material.
Right.
They did not publish stuff that they thought was of A, limited journalistic
right.
value, and B, so sensitive that
right.
it would have been damaging,
right.
as
I understand
But Rex,
it.
As you always point out, you go back to the Pentagon Papers, you go back to the Cuban fiasco, the Bay of Pigs, and, you know, those reporters, under some people's rules now, would end up in jail.
Well, under Peter King's scenario.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying.
And some reporters do. I mean, the thing, what's different about this is that it's digital, that it involves national security, but there's always this conflict. A Charlotte Observer photographer, a reporter, was arrested last week while he was just covering a protest in the state capitol.
One of those southern states you were talking about.
You're right, in North Carolina. He was wearing his Charlotte Observer identification. He was photographing. And so the cops handcuffed him, took him off, basically shut down his reporting.
And the question is, was it done gleefully or not?
Of course it was. I mean, you can't tell me that a cop on the scene looks at this Charlotte Observer identification and says, we're going to arrest him. He was clearly doing his job. And so the police chief will apologize and eventually and say, gee, we shouldn't have done that. And they'll do it again. And that's the kind of thing at a larger scale with greater consequence, I'm sure, that's going on right now in Washington and around the world where we see these things surfacing.
But a lot of sort of liberal center-left people are quite disturbed that this is happening in the Obama Justice Department and that Obama clearly has signed on to some of this. And they're shaking their heads and they're saying, this isn't why I voted for this guy.
Ah, they thought that because they were voting for a black candidate for president, that he was going to be liberal, right?
Yeah, no.
Do you think that's what it was?
First of all, they thought he was people project into the. Come on,
yeah,
Rex.
Exactly.
Don't play that card with me, Rex. but no. The fact is, people really do project into candidates with their own values, and they saw Obama, and his rhetoric was reflective of that as a sort of center-left candidate, and they don't get it when the Justice Department is gnawing away at First Amendment values.
I just think that it is the dynamic that is always at hand. Those in power are seeking to hold the line, and it is our job, whether it is on the left or on the right, to try to expose for the American people what's going on. Look, here's a story almost unnoticed in the Washington Post that the online magazine of Al-Qaeda, which is called Inspire, is hacked by U.S. spies, that the issue appears and it disappears immediately. So I think it's interesting for the American people to know that the U.S. government
is in the game.
Is in the hacking game. Yeah, pretty cool, huh? Interesting. But we should just know that.
When you saw that, Rex, did you say, that's good? Or did you chuckle? Or did you say, you know, what if that inspires them to do it to us? We know the Chinese do it to us all the time. They hack us. And one of the major things that the president of China were talking about the other day out on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And is the public upset that that report was in the paper, that revealed what the U.S. was surreptitiously doing?
I haven't heard any talk about it. I think it's kind of gotten obscured by all the other stuff going on. You know?
By the way, the last poll that I saw showed that a majority of Americans are not upset by the notion of the government knowing who they're phone calling.
No.
Right.
And nor do they think, well, I think it's a sort of mixed bag that they don't like it, but on the other hand, they don't think it has any consequences personally for them.
Yeah, well, one of the potential consequences is another erosion of our freedoms.
Now, if you are wishing to join this conversation, we are media@wamc.org. That was Ira Fussfeld just there of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, Alan Shartok of Northeast Public Radio, and I'm Rex Smith of the Times Union here from WAMC, from the posh studios, luring above. That is, yes, luring. We hope we're not luring on Central Avenue in Albany. Anyway,
By the way, if you spoke about the front drive, I'm going to give one more shot. If you missed last week's program, we did a program last week, and you can listen to it online on the podcast.
Ah, WAMC.org.
So, WAMC.org.
Well, that's a very good.
Shartok,
nice.
Judy Patrick, and I.
That's nice.
You know, it's a wonderful thing what is going on. Just to let you know what the peril of failing to support your public media, PBS NewsHour is laying off staff. They are closing one of their offices, eliminating some, quote, non-critical jobs, and going to be using more freelance video journalists. So the problem is that the production company, which I think is called McNeil Lehrer from what the show used to be called, is facing a shortfall of up to $7 million, which is a quarter of its budget.
That's a lot of money. PBS, of course, is in a lot of trouble right now because they're under attack because apparently some undue influence was given to the Koch brothers in terms of a documentary that was going to be played, which maybe people won't see now.
Which undue influence we know about because of good reporting in The New Yorker. This was a New Yorker article that exposed how PBS had caved in to the Koch brothers in delaying or maybe not even pursuing a documentary that was going to be somewhat critical of them.
Spelled Koch, pronounced Koch.
K-O-C-H, yes.
And as we've spoken about before, the Koch brothers are supposedly in line to be purchasing the Tribune Company, the Chicago Tribune and Los Angeles Times, among other publications, much to the consternation of many of the employees of those newspaper companies. And the Koch, one of the Kochs has recently come out saying, you know, we're not going to mess around with journalism.
Yeah, Charles Koch says that he was interviewed by the Wall Street Journal, and he says that their newspapers, quote, would be a marketplace of ideas. They say that it's not going to be a right-wing place. But just to keep things in perspective, there's a group called Forecast the Facts that's trying to discourage Tribune Company from selling to the Kochs, and they've put out a website that gives you an idea of what they think could happen if the Kochs buy this
stuff. Well, based on what we just saw with the PBS and not giving the money and all the rest, obviously that's a pretty good clue as to what would happen. But do you really think there's a big difference between them and what Rupert Murdoch does at the POST? Obviously, that's got a philosophy, and we know where it is. And I suspect this would just be more of the same.
I just wonder if, because these guys are, of course, interested in profit, that's why you would pursue this, I suppose.
No, we know that Murdoch continues to lose a lot of money, don't we? I mean, did you tell me that?
On the print side of things.
On the print side.
With the Post, yes.
With the POST.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I met a guy the other day, and he said, my name is POST.
Well, Murdoch has already started laying off people at the New York Post. Again, it speaks to a number of things, not the least of which is how much trouble that publication is entirely apart from the rest of his enterprises, and then now they've split apart because of the stock situation. What I read recently that was amazing to me is that ESPN, which just can't make money fast enough, is laying off hundreds of people as well.
To help it make money faster.
Yeah, they want more. Yeah. Obviously that. I look at the POST, and you may be right that they're laying off people, but I know one thing, they're not laying off the right people. That's a shot, too.
But you wonder if there's really a market in Los Angeles, Chicago, Baltimore, the cities where there are Tribune Company newspapers that would be sold to the Kochs. You wonder if those dominant media there, if they were turned into papers like the New York Post, if that would be successful. I think that the difference in the Post is that there's a niche market in New York City because there is the New York Times and the Daily News. Sure. There's all this competition. In those other cities, there isn't a second newspaper. Well, there is in Chicago, but it's already a tabloid. I don't think that necessarily you would be as successful by, in effect, postifying.
Which you may not do. In other words, you may not go all the way. For example, let me ask you a question. You know, I subscribe to the Wall Street Journal. I hate to say it, but I do.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's good journalism there. Absolutely.
So in some cases, he takes something like the New York Post, which was once Murdoch, a beautiful liberal newspaper, and he changes it into this reactionary newspaper with, you know, pictures of women with very little clothing on and the rest of it.
Tragic.
Terrible. But on the case of the Wall Street Journal, he doesn't go nearly as far to damage his product.
Absolutely. And so maybe it's true that the Kochs wouldn't be owners as terrible, except what would happen, surely, is the opinion pages would
They're going to buy, if they buy those papers, they're going to buy them at rock bottom prices. They're going to consolidate a lot of operations. They're going to emphasize digital, and they're going to make some money.
And making money. Let's hear it once again for WAMC, which did a lot of that. All right. So come back. And
all right. That's all enough. Right. Let's get out of here.
I'm just saying.
Just saying. See you next
week.
Keep
on keeping on.
Now, newspaper men are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people.
Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers.